G'day Groovers, welcome to another instalment of my favourite, actually I don't know if it is my favourite podcast, I do love Joe Rogan, but I'm going to put myself second. The U Project, of course, is it. I am Craig Harper, and that woman over there that you can't see that runs the show is Tiffany Ann Cook. Good morning to you.
Good morning, I do believe it's afternoon.
Oh yeah, Anthony we've tripped into 12:20.
Get out of your Ugg boots, bro.
Yeah, I've kicked off the slippers. I've thrown the cardigan onto the shag pile, and here I am. How's your morning been?
Yeah, it's been really good, thanks.
Well, that's it.
Well, I was out walking the dog, and then I looked at the time. I was on the phone having a yarn, and I looked at the phone and went, oh dear, I'm at the other end of Elwood, and I've got a podcast in 15 minutes. So I was in a big hot puffer jacket, and I had to run home.
It's a good thing you're a boxer and an elite athlete, because otherwise you would have been, I would have had to push all the buttons and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So that would have been a catastrophe. I tell you who's not a catastrophe, who's much more efficient than you and I both put together, is Janine Ellis, who is, I don't even know where to start with all the shit that you've done, Janine. You've done a lot of stuff. And honestly, when I look at your bio, it seems a bit braggy. I mean, really, congratulations on the busyness of your life. In all seriousness, you've done a lot of stuff. Are you exhausted?
No, not at all. I'm the reverse. I think I'm addicted to busy, so, which is probably my own thing I've got to work through. But no, not at all.
Do you find in the middle of all of your busyness, is there happiness and fulfillment and purpose and all those things that we love, or is there just busyness?
No, all of the above. All of the above. I think it was, you know, from 30 to 40, it was just busy and detriment to me. Mm. Pretty much from 40 to 55, I've never been healthier, more centered, clearer head, and fitter.
You know, I think it's really interesting that, and this is just because I'm old as fuck, I have this theory that if we do the right work, we actually get better as we get older. To a point, of course, there's an inevitability of aging. Of course, we're not being delusional. However, at 57, and I know what you're thinking, Janine, you're thinking, fuck, he doesn't look a day over 56. I feel like my brain and my body and my creativity and my problem solving and my recall and all of that stuff is as good as ever, maybe better. Do you feel like you're improving or in a holding pattern or going backwards?
I think pretty much from 40, I found that I actually look at photos of me when I was 40 and look at like now 50, and I look probably 10 years older than I look now. Mm. And I think it's because first I was stressed to buggery, and I wasn't eating and I wasn't exercising. I wasn't doing any of that. And then 40, I had this big epiphany. I went, right, I need to refigure my life, because I always was sporty, but, you know, business and life sort of got in the way. And, you know, 40, I took up yoga. I took up horse riding. I took up tennis. I took up surfing. I took up, had another baby. Like, I just kind of went, right, I need some changes in my life. And so, yeah, sort of throw it all those out. But for probably from then on, I've really been searching. I mean, yoga was transformative for me in my body, my mind, everything. So that's been my biggest thing. But you know, I think we were talking before about, you know, how you part of gyms. I mean, I used to be a aerobic instructor when I was 18, you know, and worked at Vigor as a, you know, in the gym. So, you know, it's but up. But I think just to your point about age, and you mentioned you like Joe Rogan. And I just listened to a podcast of his interviewed with a guy called David, Dr.
Sinclair.
David Sinclair, and loved it. And really a lot of those terms, you know, it says, you know, obviously we know that fat rats die earlier than skinny rats. You know, we know that, right? We know that intermittent fasting works. We know that fruit and vegetables work. We know exercise works. We know all these things that work. And we also know what we lose as we get older. And if we can somehow supplement it, you can actually turn the clock back. And I think one of the things I'm reading a lot about at the moment is the fact that you've got a biological clock and you've got the number. And you only need to walk down the street and see a little old lady who is on a walking frame, and then equally my friend Gail, who's 86 and surfs every day. And you just go, there is no comparison to these two people.
Exactly right. Yeah, and you raise a good point. And one is arbitrary and one is unavoidable and inevitable. And that is chronological aging. It doesn't matter what happens. We're either going to be dead in a year or 1 year older. Let's hope we're 1 year older on the calendar. But there's a great deal of control and flexibility and malleability about biological age. And, you know, I talk about it a lot on this show, so people get tired of me banging on about it, but it still surprises me that, you know, it's like pretty much the only resource in our life that we can't replace is our body. And without being conceited or vain or arrogant, it literally is the most important thing, in inverted commas, that you have. But sometimes it's the thing that we take the least care of, because the up and downside is bodies are really fucking resilient. So you can do bad shit to them for a long time, but not forever, you know? No. So was there a moment for you when, like you said, you jumped into yoga when you were in your 40s? Did you have a moment? Was there some minor catastrophe, or did you just have an internal revolution and go, I'm going to change stuff?
No, I think pretty much, like, I was a person who had no idea about business, who jumped into business and created Boost. And so that those years of doing that was actually fairly full on. And it took a toll on me physically, mentally. But how I used to solve that was go hard, smash myself against a wall, and then go to a yoga retreat, fill the bucket back up, and then go again, right? But it got to a point where that bucket couldn't be filled anymore. And it was that real, it's time to make a change. You know, I think I was really average at everything. I was an average wife, I was an average mother, I was an average business person, because I was trying to do too much. And I think it was that maturity of the mind to go, you to your point, you know, the body can take so much, and you know, and the mind can take so much, and then you go, okay, you need to really look at how you are. And equally, you know, I feel great, I feel amazing. You know, I'm sure you'd realize, you know, I was 54 and I went on to Survivor and pretty much did better physically than a lot of elite athletes, and mainly because that was the mind and the body.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I mean, obviously I knew who you were, so I didn't have to do a deep dive. Like, sometimes Tiff gets me obscure people. I don't know who they are, and it takes me 3 hours to figure out who the fuck we're talking to. But but they're always good. She always gets good people. And when she said you were coming, I'm like, boom, great. But I remember I saw yesterday or the day before a picture of you in Survivor. And I went, no, that's not. I went, hang on. And I had to kind of squint my shitty old eyes a bit and lean into the screen and go, she looks fucking ridiculous. How old is she? I thought, I thought Janine was in her 50s. And then I went, I had to figure out how old you were. And I went, oh, she is in her 50s. Like, your biological age, you know, I haven't done a test, of course, but you are way younger than your chronology. So kudos to you. I mean, that's amazing. And, you know, that's one of the things that people are astounded when they realize they can literally, and, you know, also pursuant to your David Sinclair conversation, and he is amazing, folks. If you don't know who he is, do a deep dive on him if you want to learn about winding back the clock or being a late bloomer. But, you know, the fact that we can literally change our cellular physiology. We can lower our resting heart rate. We can get rid of inflammation. We can, you know, people who are diabetic can become non-diabetic. You know, I mean, there's so much amazing stuff that we can do by manipulating what we've got to work with, rather than resigning ourselves, in inverted commas, to typical aging. So good for you.
But I think you look at what people put in their mouth. Most of what people put in their mouth isn't food. It's more numbers on the back of a packet, and so processed that it doesn't even resemble what it started off with. And I just think that, you know, we choose every day what we put in our mouth. We choose every day how we move. You know, if I don't move in some capacity every day, whether it's a walk, whether it's yoga, whether it's a swim, and I've just rediscovered swimming, which I'm loving. You know, my intention today is to squeeze into this wetsuit, which will take me 20 minutes to get into because it's so thick, and go for a surf, right? And hopefully the waves aren't too big to scare me. But, you know, how great that you can do that at any age, you know? Yeah. And I find, I don't know about you, but I really do look towards people well older than me who are doing things that I wish I could do and just go, right, I choose to be that person. I don't choose to be that person.
And I think I agree. And I think it's not about, as I've said, I think sometimes people get a little bit concerned that we're pretending that I'm pretending I'm 30. Definitely not pretending I'm 30 or 40. Well aware of how old, in inverted commas, I am. But I think one of the things that we do in our culture very much is we live, in inverted commas, age appropriately. I fucking hate that term, age appropriate. We dress age appropriate. We've got to do age appropriate workouts. Fuck your age appropriate workout. Like, you know, I think people in their 60s, 70s and 80s and a bit earlier should be lifting heavy weights. No, I don't mean pink fucking vinyl coated dumbbells. I mean, strength training, because, you know, there's a thing called sarcopenia. It's conditioning, which is just muscle wasting in the elderly. And that's one of the biggest issues with people as they get old. It's not necessarily that they're, you know, they break their hip or they break their shoulder or whatever, or their leg, not because they're predisposed to that, but just because they have so little muscle and strength, they can't recover when they trip.
No, so correct.
But let's just get people strong.
But when you said before that, you know, you're not pretending to be 30s or 40s, to be honest, you're probably fitter than most 30s and 40s. You probably can do more than 30s and 40s. So I think the number kind of, look, I think there's some things that you can't change, right? So, you know, women in menopause, right? It comes. But the reality is you can actually supplement it. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, if my hormones are dropping, I need to replace my hormones. Mm. You know, I'm a firm believer in that. Now, I'm not saying, you know, everyone should agree with me, but for me, that is something I believe in. You know, I will look at, hello, Talia. This is my daughter.
Hi, Talia.
Hi.
Welcome to the U Project.
She's my midlife crisis I had at 40.
Oh, wow. No. Well, is mum hard work, Talia?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew that. Thanks for dropping in.
Yeah, see ya. But actually interesting, like my husband is like, because I do yoga, I have a very good core. And you know when you go to the bar and they try to pretend you're not good at pool and you do pool?
Yeah.
He'll basically push me out to do planks. Now, for some reason, I can do a 12-minute plank, right?
Wow.
I haven't done it for a while, but if there's money on it or a bet, I can do it. But, you know, and I've done that against, you know, elite athletes who just cannot believe it. And it's not because I'm better or stronger. It's just that I'm not an age. I work at my body and my body is strong.
Mm. Well, you're definitely better and stronger. So just own that. How do you train? So you surf, you do yoga. Like the body that I saw, which that photo was a year or so old, but I guess you're pretty much the same, but that looked like an athlete's body. That didn't look like a 50 something body, no disrespect to anyone. I'm 50 something. How do you train and how do you stay? Also, you seem to be quite lean. You seem to have a very athletic body composition. And
13 year old boy.
What?
Some would say a 13-year-old boy.
Well, I didn't want to say that, but let's be honest. No, you don't. You look great. So how do you train is my long-winded question.
Look, not as much as to go on to Survivor, I did put more effort in because it scared the shit out of me. So all I did on Survivor was my normal yoga, which I try and do that 5 or 6 times a week, and it's Ashtanga yoga if anyone's listening and knows yoga. The other thing I did, I got this guy who was, his name's Paul Taylor, and he gave me an 8-minute workout, right?
Paul Taylor's one of my best mates.
Right. He was good, right? So did you do his 8-minute workouts?
Tiff does.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, right? So I do them. But you keep going. How can you not find 8 minutes, right? And now my dog coming in. It's like this whole thing, right? So I did the 8-minute workouts. Every day I'd run up and down stairs and I did my yoga and I swam a bit, right? Not a lot, but I swam a bit. So that was sort of my routine with regard to my fitness. So, yeah. But it wasn't crazy. It wasn't like I was doing 6 hours a day. You know, the 8-minute workouts were 8 minutes. My yoga, yep, that goes for about an hour, hour 15, but pretty much that was it. And, you know, I'm a netballer from way back. So that's kind of it. So I wasn't this crazy, you know, person that does this, you know, fitness freak PT person. I'm just this person who, the other thing I did for Survivor was I went on keto because I was really conscious about being hungry. So I wanted to get my system into that, into that keto process, so I wasn't hungry. So they were the things that I sort of did. And Paul was great with, you know, mental stuff and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But he's just a great guy, as you know.
He's ridiculous. We're both doing our PhD in psych at the moment, and so we're often ringing each other up and sooking about bloody statistics and data analysis and SPSS, which is a program.
Yes.
Carly's just come in, and the dog, and they're gone. Boom.
Goodbye.
running commentary on the Alice household. He's amazing. And it's amazing when, you know, you put together all the components of performance, whether that's performance in business or performance on Survivor or performance as an elite athlete or performance as in, you know, just trying to maintain physical, mental, emotional health. You know, it is about your body. It is about nutrition. It is about, you know, training and movement, but it's also about sleep. It's also about mindset. It's also about organization and structure and process. It's really multidimensional. And I think one of the challenges for people is, like, everybody wants to look and feel good. Of course, nobody wants to look and feel bad. But the challenge for people is that it ain't a 3-minute process, and it's an ongoing forever process. And some of the shit that we need to do is not fun, quick, or easy.
No, but my God, how good does it make you feel?
100%, you're talking, like, to the converted sister.
And it's addictive, you know. So I am, like, so I've decided to swim every day. When I moved to New South Wales, which, yeah, I'm not there now, but when I was there, I went every day, I'm going to get in the ocean, right? And I would talk myself, my whole mind would be going, do you really want to do it today? No. Yeah, it's a bit cold. Yeah, really? But I'm actually putting my wetsuit on while this dialogue's going through my head about why I shouldn't be doing it. Mm. And then you do it, and you do that first, whoa, right, that's cold. And then you do it, and then you're feeling amazing. You get out and you've got this, like, joy. Mm. It's like this endorphin of joy that you feel. Mm. And I think the ocean is magical like that. I think it's very hard to jump into the ocean and not come out in a better mood than going in. So I don't know why us as humans, we go, oh, we'll go in the water, it's cold. Mm. Or, I won't go on to swim. It's ridiculous. Why would you do that? In actual fact, we now know research shows that being cold and cold water and cold water therapy is incredibly good for your immunity. It's good for your skin. It's good for how you think. So I don't know what's wrong with us that we battle this negativity and go for the packet of chips.
Yeah, you're right. There's some really good research coming out lately around, thermogenesis and managing our body temperature, but also managing the environment that we are in. And, you know, like, for example, people are always fascinated when they hear something like this. So if, for example, you go for a 5-kilometer walk in the morning, let's say it takes you 1 hour. So you're walking at 5 kilometers per hour, 1 hour, and let's say it's 22 degrees and you walk around and you got your sneakers and your shorts and your singlet on, it's 22 degrees. Now, in some parallel universe, the next day you do the same walk, same speed, same course, same distance in the same clothes, but it's 0 degrees. Now, doing the exact same thing over the exact same course, because now your body's got to, fund the walk, it's got to fuel the walk. So there's the energy expenditure there, but also now it's got to try and thermoregulate your normal body temperature in the middle of this 0-degree environment. So you get this double bang. So now you're stimulating your body in a different way, nervous system in a different way. Your energy expenditure is going through the roof. Your metabolism's getting a kick in the guts just because you changed one variable. Mm. You know, and we know that cognitive function, generally speaking, works better. In other words, our brain works better in a colder room, not a warmer room. So in my house downstairs here, where I'm in downstairs, I call this Tasmania because the bottom of my house is fucking freezing and the top is Queensland, right? So when I relax, I go to Queensland. When I want to be productive, I come to Tasmania, which is downstairs.
Nice. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that people kind of know it intuitively, but now the science is actually now catching up with people just what they know.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you, so we have a lot of people who are trying to figure out what they want to do, be, create, become with their life, with their career, with their body, with their, you know, trying to figure out things like purpose and path and those big, you know, why am I here, existential kind of questions sometimes. And I know that you started Boost Juice. Congratulations, by the way, all silliness aside, it's amazing. It's an amazing thing that you did. And I know you're probably self-deprecating and going, nah, just fucking, you know, but you worked incredibly hard. You built something amazing, an international brand. You did all this cool shit, but you started in your house in 2000. Is that right?
Yeah, no, pretty much. And look, the reality is I had zero business experience, like none. You know, I didn't know the difference between debit and credit. I went, left school at 16, never went to university, like just kind of went, okay, what would I like as a consumer? And I think if I had a superpower, my superpower is making complicated things simple, because I just had to. And so, yeah, so pretty much 2000 started, had the idea and did it with my husband, and he did the sort of the marketing. He was in radio, so he did the marketing and was getting the sites. So I was sort of putting it together and doing the recipes, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, 4 years later we had 100 stores, and, what, 20 years later we've got, you know, 660 stores in 12 countries with number of brands and, you know, crazy.
It is crazy. What was the original concept? So before you did anything, before you registered a website or before you got a premises or before you even started looking, what was the initial concept and what was currently in the market?
There wasn't much in Australia. It was the concept had been around 7 years in America. There was a Jamba Juice, there was a Robex, there was Smoothie King. There was a number of them over in America and they were going okay. They're actually going quite well. But I didn't really like their concepts. So it was really like, I like the category, but I wanted to create something that was uniquely what I would want as a customer.
Yep.
You know, I can't tell you I was a marketer because I wasn't, you know, I went to a tech school. Do you know what a tech school is?
Yeah, of course. I grew up in Latrobe Valley, dude. I'm a bogan.
Right.
I'm a straight up bogan.
Mate, I grew up in Boronia. I beat you, right?
Well, I normally wear flannel, but I put on this black t-shirt because I wanted to impress you.
I'm impressed. I actually did think, wow, nice t-shirt, right?
You should be. It's my special one.
See, I feel very, very honoured. So I learned how to do woodwork, sheet metal and type 100 words a minute, right? So, which was very, that was probably the only thing that was handy. For me, I had no business experience, but honestly, it was my best thing, because as soon as you don't know something, you don't put a barrier on it. The 100%. Second, like even physically, right? So if you, I remember with Survivor, Big Sean, like 6'5" Sean, AFL genius, right? He turned to me, the skinny little, you know, 55-year-old, 54-year-old then, and went, I don't think I can beat you in this. And it's sort of like you go, how do you even think that this little midget girl can actually outweigh you? Funnily enough, I did beat him on that day.
What was the event?
It was just this holding thing. And I think because it was a calculation of body weight to weight, but what I found was it was more in the brain. Like one of the things I've always done, and Paul Taylor also, you know, we spoke about it when I was doing some prep work for Survivor, was taking yourself away from where you are today. So for example, when I do Ashtanga has all these Sanskrit names for all the poses. And so whenever I'm in a moment where I need to take away my mind from my body, I actually start to think about the names of all these poses that I do, which are quite complicated, and my brain needs to really think about it. And so then I don't think about holding a rope or standing there holding, you know, using my biceps or whatever. So that was what I pretty much did all the time, is I just went to another place and left my body sort of standing doing the hard work. And it's funny how the brain gives up so much quicker than the body, and the body is so capable of so many amazing things, don't you think?
Oh, 100%. You know, in exercise science, I'll bore the fuck out of you. There's a thing called rate of perceived exertion. Some people call it perceived rate of exertion. Doesn't matter, same thing. And what it means, Janine and Tiff and everyone, is how hard. So when you're doing something, let's just simplify it. Let's say you're doing push-ups or you're running or you're fucking riding a bike hard or climbing a wall or something. It's how hard you believe. It's a self-assessment of how hard you think you're working. And it's essentially, I'm working at 90% of max, which would be 9 out of 10, or 70% of max, or 60 or 40. My experience training tens of thousands of people, I had 500 trainers work for me, Janine. I had, you know, we did 80,000 PT sessions a year when we were kind of at our zenith, right? So we did a lot, lots of athletes all over, Olympic athletes, all that stuff. My observation is that most people, and I'm just generalizing, not all, but the majority think that they're working at about 8 or 9 out of 10 when they're probably closer to 50. Mm. Now, I'm talking about absolute potential. I'm not talking what's hard or what's comfortable or uncomfortable, but in terms of what is fucking humanly possible, you're not nearly at 90, you're at 40, you're at 50, and you think you're about to die, you're not even fucking close to dying, right? But as you said, like, our mind gets in the way. So when you can get out of your mind, in inverted commas, and you shut down the stories, oh, fuck, this is so hard, I can't do it. You shut down the stories and you shift your energy and your attention somewhere else. Time changes, time bends, time is, it's a different construct. But when you are living second to second in the pain, it takes fucking forever, you know? So you've obviously, or you may not have, but have you heard of David Goggins?
No.
Well, David Goggins, do a deep dive on him. You will fucking dig him. He is, how much of a weirdo is he, Tiff?
little bit.
In what way?
Inspirational weirdo. There's this, he's just this hard man. He was a Marine, he was a SEAL, he was all this stuff. And he basically talks about resilience and he talks about staying hard. And he's just done all this weird shit, but he's genuinely, he's not fake inspirational. He's genuinely this inspirational, albeit somewhat crazy guy. But he talks about, you know, basically this threshold as well of what we think, you know, I think I'm working at whatever he goes. Most people, he says similar to me, most people are working at about 40, but think they're nearly at max. And it's not that we want people to kill themselves or live every day working, you know, redlining their aerobic system or whatever, but it's just going, you know, like even the idea of what is hard, that's a story. People go, oh, this is so hard. I go, no, cancer's hard. That's not hard. That's just an inconvenience. You know, being a quadriplegic, that's fucking hard. What you're talking about, no, that's, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but when you tell yourself a story of doom and gloom, then you believe the story, now you're in doom and gloom. And of course, there are people with legit problems. I'll shut up in a sec.
No.
But then there are also these, you know, self-created things where I am with my thinking, you know, metacognition is thinking about thinking, right? I am making my life worse, not because the external reality of my life is bad, but because the internal dialogue is a shit fest.
No, completely. And I probably realized that was an aha moment for me on Survivor. Because, you know, you rock up to these challenges, which you go, oh my God, today's a game, I'm gonna die, right? These are ridiculously hard. And you've got nothing else in your life, right? You're on this little island, you're in this little bubble, and you're playing for your team, so that gives you more motivation than playing for yourself, or you're playing for whatever you do. And you actually get surprised because you go, there's no way I can stand on a pole for that long or hold something for that long or do whatever you do. But you do probably 10 times more than you think you're even capable of. My girlfriend, Pia, this little tiny actress, stood in a position for 6 hours on the last challenge, right? There's not a hope in hell that we would have ever thought we could do that. Mm. And the other interesting thing with it is because everyone came in with, you know, everyone comes in with their, you know, ailments, right? Whether it's, you know, pain, I've got, you know, pain in your thumbs or pain in your joints, particularly the ex-athletes, like someone like Simon Black, who's AFL Brownlow medalist. Interesting, on a diet of beans, coconut and rice, everyone went off their meds. No one needed pain things. All inflammation went, all their pain went. And so it was, and obviously we're eating really leanly, right? And so it taught me so much about the mental, but also the physical and also what you ate. You know? Yeah. So it was fascinating, that experiment that I did for 44 days living in the dirt, how much it taught me about how much we can do things so much better and how we overcomplicate it.
What were the key things you learned for you? Not necessarily that are globally applicable, but for you, what did you learn about?
I was scared going onto the island that I would, because I feel like I'm addicted to busy. And I felt like on the island that I was, that I would have, that would have blown my head up. And yet I really enjoyed the time just to be so simple. I learned to be grateful again, because we, to your point, you know, we don't have it hard in Australia, even a freaking lockdown. You know, look at Lebanon, they're running out of water, for God's sake. And India, thousands of people are dying every second, right? So we don't have it hard. So gratefulness, so grateful for a bed, grateful for a pillow, grateful for family. Like, it really was that really gratefulness. And I think that everyone needs to do it. It was awesome for my relationship. You know, having that, you know, 44 days away from my husband was just a grateful for him. It taught me about, I think the key thing is we're so much more physically capable than we think we, than we think we are. You know, I thought my capabilities were here, but some of the things I did were, you know, blew even my mind. I went, oh my God, I'm still here. What am I, how can I still be here, you know, in a physical form? It taught me that. It taught me about that you became quite primal, like that I don't need all this stuff. We just have so much stuff. You know, I looked up at the sky every day to work out what time it was, you know, or you know, what I needed to do. So I think it was, you know, not that everyone can go and do Survivor, but I think that certainly put yourself out of your comfort zone physically, mentally, and see what you can achieve. And I also believe that going back to your other point with regard to our body, the body will give you anything you need, right? So if you need it to lift weights, it will give you that. If you're equally, if you want to sit in a chair all day, it will give you the muscles to do that, which doesn't need much. So the body will give you at any age whatever you need. I took my mum, who's 86, and started to do yoga. And, you know, her body was, you know, obviously just so calcified and couldn't even open. But even just sort of doing that, even at her level, you know, it's, she's just, she just seeing how much she can actually get up off the floor easy, just simple things. And equally my father, who's less motivated than my mother, he's 91, like, you know, he doesn't move. He could, but he doesn't move. So you can actually see why someone not moving to a point where you'll just stop moving, like, forever. 100%.
Well, I mean, you would have seen, Tiff, you would have seen, because you're an athlete. I've worked with heaps of athletes who had a knee reco, ankle reco, whatever, hip issues, but especially with a knee reco where they're completely immobilized for, you know, or largely immobilized for 4 weeks. This big muscular quad shrinks by half in 4 weeks. And this is on a 25-year-old, young, strong, genetically gifted athlete. And you go, oh, my God. Like, it literally, if we don't use it, we lose it. Even if you're young and strong and full of testosterone or estrogen, progesterone, male, female, whatever. You know, but 100% movement, you know, is paramount. I wanted to ask you, why do you think you need to be busy? What's behind that? Like, why are you addicted to busy?
I don't know if I think I'm built that way. I just think that I think that we come out of the womb in with certain DNAs, right? I also believe that I'm positively skewed, right? So I think that I'm always constantly going, if you tell me a problem, immediately my mind's going, there's a positive in there somewhere, right? Let me tell you about a positive, right? At least you're not in Lebanon, you know?
Yes.
So I don't know. I think that I'm not a person that gets a blues, but if I ever get down, it's because I feel like I haven't got a purpose. And so I'm actually accepted that that's me and that's okay and be busy, but also equally find my little moments of sitting on the beach and just enjoying the smell of the ocean or, you know, so I'm getting better at enjoying moments. But equally, I try and read things that help me with my mindset. So I read the New Earth. With Eckhart Tolle, loved it, right? I'm sure it's been out for about 50 years, right? I'm not exactly quick, right?
That's all right.
But really enjoyed it. And there's another book that I picked up when I was in my peak of stress at Boost, which was, I'm just so you know, I'm not religious at all, to a point where I'm really going, it's the, you know, the meaning of more death than anything. So, right, not about human religion, but this person taught me about this book called Conversations with God.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not really a religious book. I've read it. It's very spiritual more than religious anyway.
Yeah, And it's all about actually more how you think, more than it's actually really anti-religion. Anyway, but you know, the title doesn't exactly help you think that though.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But it's a really good, I found those sort of books really help you with your mindset, you know, get out of the ego, you know, take just to try and just find, I find that it helps my level of stress levels, because stress is obviously, as we know, the biggest killer and the biggest cause of disease, but stress is completely manifested by us. It's not real. It's only what we think about it. And we also, all of our stresses come from what we think might happen in the future more than what's happening to us now. And it's, and so that sort of stuff is something that I've worked on over the years, which I think I've just got it now at, you know, 55. Just.
That's very, you're very aware. My PhD is in self-awareness, and that's very aware. And you're exactly, you don't need me to tell you this, but you're exactly right. I mean, for the most part, you know, stress is a self-created state, and people don't like to hear that because they think you're picking on them, but I'm actually trying to empower people. And I go, well, look, you know, when someone goes, oh my God, such a stressful situation, yet you look in the situation, there's someone who's stressed, someone who's not stressed, someone who's laughing, someone who's crying. You know, we've got all these different kind of experiences being had in the middle of the same situation. And you go, well, if the cause of stress was the situation, then everybody would be having the same experience. Rather that, so in our, you know, there's the external and internal world. So the external world is situation, circumstance, environment, weather, whatever, government. That's the external world we inhabit, COVID, whatever. But then there's the internal world, which is really where living happens, which is in our thoughts and ideas and our interpretation of that external world and the meaning that we give things and the value and power that we assign events and people and words and experiences. You know, and the human experience is indeed subjective in the middle of all of these objective events. But we don't realize that. We just think my experience is everyone's experience. My reality is everyone's. No, it's fucking not. That's why you're stressed and the person next to you is not. Now, this is not self-loathing. This is self-awareness. And when we realize, and by the way, of course, some things are more likely to create a stress response, of course. But when you can find somebody like me or you, I'm sure, Janine, or even Tiff, I can walk on a stage to 1,000 people and be not only just not stressed, but so fucking excited to be there, right? But most people would be terrified. But it's not about being on stage. It's not about the room, the situation, the 1,000 people. It's about your story in that moment. It's about your reaction, your feelings in that moment. And again, not good or bad. It's just how we're wired. So then when we step out of the unconsciousness of assigning blame to situations, et cetera, and we step into the awareness of, oh no, this is me actually, then we can really shift our reality.
Do you think though part of it is that we don't live a life, like we're not in the era where there's war. We're not in a country where we're running out of water like Lebanon, or, you know, I'm too scared to say my opinion, I'll get stoned or what. So do you feel like because our level of the worst thing that can happen to us is actually not that bad for most of us, that we stress over the minutiae? Is that what it is?
You ask a really good question, Grasshopper, and you are going deep, and I need to be careful because I could get stoned. I think the short answer is yes, I think that's part of it. But also our brain is wired to look for problems and trouble and to stay safe. And that's kind of keeps us safe to a point, but it also can create, taken too far, it can create problems. But also, you know, there's a bit of a dichotomy because, like, for example, I'm not a parent, you're a parent, but thank God I'm not a parent. Not because I don't love kids, but I'd be terrible. But, you know, so for example, I see raising, you know, all my friends have got kids and, you know, you see them raising them and there's a, you know, there's this challenge of I want to protect and love and be there and be empathetic and empower them. But you get to a point where when you do so much for them, you stop them falling down and building resilience and learning and scraping their knees And so there's this kind of line, I guess, where like suffering is actually empowering, but it's got to be done the right way. We're not talking about just, you know, blatant suffering, and but we're talking about, you know, like how do we get strong? Well, we do hard shit. How do we do strong? We go on Survivor for 40 whatever days and we fucking flog ourselves and get punished. But I bet there's way more good than bad that you took away from that. Why? Because you did something that's hard as fuck, changed your mind, created a new paradigm. You started to learn things about yourself. You built skill and awareness and resilience that if you hadn't have done that, you wouldn't have developed those things that way. And so I believe that adversity and pain and suffering in an intelligent application is incredibly valuable, because what we're then doing is we are creating a more efficient, more effective, more resilient us. So we're becoming a fucking weapon in the middle of all of the shit that we can't control.
Interesting you say that about the kid thing. My oldest son is a full-on hippie in the middle of Byron Bay.
Yeah.
And he was that kid that got into drugs. And I'm a fixer, right? I fix problems, right? So I tried to fix him, right? So I sort of, you know, so I went down and went, right, okay, you're in a bad group. I'll send you overseas for a trip, right? That'll fix you, right? He nearly got into jail for the rest of his life, right? I kept on grabbing him from the pot and throwing him into the fire, right? And then I had this aha moment where I went, and the best thing I ever did for him was nothing, right? Yeah. So this is a kid who lived on the streets in northern New South Wales, right? This is a kid that would ring me and saying he's bin diving because apparently the food that Coles throws out is fine. Who knew, right? Who knew? This is a kid who you'd love him, but was doing all sorts of stuff, which he told me he's allowed to tell me all the stuff until he's 35. Equally, this is a kid who rang me and said to me, Mum, finally I've met the woman of my dreams. And I went, oh, Samuel, that's great news, because I'm a firm believer that the best thing you can do is in life is the biggest decision is the right partner. And he said, tell me about it. I said, all right, Mum, she's got dark brown hair, blue brown eyes. She's beautiful. She's got four kids. And I went, oh, my God, Lord. I said to him, I thought, that's all right. He doesn't like hard work and he doesn't like loud noise. Won't last. Anyway, called me a week later. Mum, I've got even better news. What is it, Samuel? I'm so excited. Tell me. He goes, she's pregnant. All right. Hey. Right. I said, give me a bottle of red and a straw. And I'm laughing, right? Anyway, so I went to Byron Bay to meet them. I thought, here we go. It's going to be a woman with four kids, a whole lot of feral family. And anyway, she got out of the...
Not judgy at all.
I was so judgy. I admit it. I was so judgy, right?
Fucking hilarious.
She rocked up in this Bongo van. I went, oh, God, here we go, right? She got out, took two steps towards me, and I loved her. She is the most... divine, gorgeous woman. The kids are gorgeous. They're amazing. He married her 5 years ago. They've got two more kids. They live this hippie lifestyle. They kill their own food. He's off all drugs. He's 30 years old and just creaming it. Like, it's just, but the point I'm making is I had to stop doing anything. He had to find his own purpose. He had to not come to me for the crutch. He had to go on this journey of, you know, eating roadkill and bin diving and all the stuff that you do apparently when you're young.
Well, good for him that he found his own path and Mum didn't need to hold his hand. Hey, Mum, fuck off. Let me grow up.
Yeah, no, it was more actually the interesting thing with kids is they don't know that nothing is the answer. They keep coming to you to a point where you just go, see ya. Yeah. The reason I love you is I'm doing nothing. So I think it's those parents that, and you know, everyone raise their chins to is to feel like they have to do everything for their kids. Mm. Our kids know pretty much is, hey, I gave you a good education. You have always got a roof over your head, but mate, you're on your own.
Mm. Well, good for you, Mum. Good for you. And now you're a grandmother.
I am, twice over. God help me.
How old are the grandkids?
Four and two, and then there's the other four, which, you know, start from 13 all the way, and they work all the way down to.
So you would have been just 50-ish when you became a grandma for the first time, right?
Yes.
How did the ego go with that?
Oh, I didn't mind. Samuel, children beat judgment out of you, right? So yeah. Samuel well beat me to a pulp of what I expected my children to do, you know, because you sort of think. You know, you think they're going to follow the bouncing ball pretty much like you do. Mm. And then, you know, one kid does this, one kid does that. So now, you know, having the fourth one on, mm. you just go, I'm just a spectator. They all come with it. To your point, your question earlier, you all come with your own DNA. I mean, I've got a hippie. I've got a massive capitalist who's doing this YouTubing, who's smashing it out of the park. I mean, I've got all of them.
What? And who's the YouTuber?
Oh, his name's Riley. He's absolutely, he's got this, he actually explains backstory of some of those games like Warcraft or Warhammer, all those games. He actually talks about the backstory in a very, you think you swear, that's nothing compared to him, right? He's actually got this, he's got like 200,000 subscribers. It's called Major Kill. He does these 3D little printing things from home and sells them for $34, you know, and sells these big wind cheaters with Major Kill on it with G'day Fuckheads on the thing. Like,
of course he does.
It's 90% American target. He's earning $400,000 a year. He's just going, how easy is this, Mum?
I can't believe you're not wearing a G'day Fuckheads wind cheater.
I know. I should be more supportive as a mother.
Could you though? I tell you what. I'll know that you're fully committed when you put one of them on and post it.
No, he freaking won't even give me one for free. He's a bloody capitalist. He thinks you're a
fucking squillionaire, Grandma. Buy one.
Apparently,
of course.
Yeah, apparently I paid for his education. He at least gets a T-shirt that I won't wear because people will judge me.
Doesn't matter that he's a grown-up. You're going to keep paying. You know that in some way. Hey, Tiff, how long have we been going? About 50 minutes?
About 45.
Have you got 5 or 10, Janine? How are you for time?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. All right, just quickly. So you're normal, you're human, you're driven, you're quite exceptional with your behaviour, but as you said, you didn't go to uni, you didn't think you were particularly hugely talented. Wow, that's up for debate. But, you know, one of the things that seems to be a pretty prevalent common denominator with people like you who are entrepreneurs and take a concept and something in your head and turn it into something in the world is that, yeah, you're driven and you know, you're creative and you're disciplined and you can execute on ideas, but also instinctively and intuitively intelligent. Like, we spoke recently to a guy called Mark, what's his name, Tiff? Netflix bloke?
Oh, Randolph. Mark Randolph.
Mark Randolph, who started Netflix, right? And same, just like intuitively intelligent and just knew. I know you don't have a marketing background or a business degree or all of that, but I actually think the best entrepreneurs, and sometimes I use this in inverted commas, but even the best psychologists aren't psychologists. Mm. You know, like some people who just really understand human behavior, and I'm not saying they should be prescribing anything, but they can read people and they can read situations and they can read the market. And you can know, like you said, you know, you can know what people want and what people will pay for. Mm. Feel like that you intuitively and innately had that gift of being able to understand what would work, and not just in the market but just in life?
Do I think I am that person?
Do you think that you have a gift for that? Because you seem to.
I don't know. I don't think about it. I think you equally know how flawed you are. I mean, I make up words all the time. Like, you know, and I think they're nearly right, but they're not quite right, right?
It sounds right.
Yeah, it comes close. So I think that you know that you're driven. You get shit done, but equally, you know, you still know that you are this, you know, flawed person that's still on this journey of learning. You know, I think the day that we think that we're, you know, what's that 7 most dangerous words in business is, we've always done it that way. I think the day you start thinking that way, say it's over. I'm still trying to work out what I want to be when I grow up. So, you know, I sort of go, I just think that we're on this journey, and I, you know, and I know, and sometimes I say stupid things. I get really annoyed at myself for saying stupid things. I need to say less. I think I need a bit more.
I don't know about that. So when we talked, we spoke briefly about meaning and purpose. We haven't spoken about identity. Where do you, and this is a deep philosophical question, but where do you get your sense of self from, or your identity from? Or is that not something you consider?
As a marketer and as a publicist, because I was a publicist for a while, I sort of understand there's a brand Janine. But as an identity who I am, I think you can't even describe it. It's like a knowing. You know, do you ever play tennis, or I'm not even a good tennis player, but you know when you, or you catch a wave and you just get, everything just gets right, and you jump on that wave and it just feels right, or you hit that tennis ball and you go, oh, my God, that was a beautiful tennis ball. Mm. I think when I'm my true self, that's how it feels.
Mm.
Like you just go, ah, yeah, that's right. And when I do things that are not part of my true self,
mm.
It's you know, when, for example, if I'm in a board meeting and I'm trying too hard and I might say something that I think is intelligent, but not kind of knowing that I want to say it's intelligent, right? And really, you know, it's really, you go, oh, it's like I'm missing that tennis ball, right? Mm. Or missing that timing of the wave. I think when I find my true self is when it just feels right. When I do something kind, I think that's my true self. Or I get off the, or I swim in the ocean, or I find that that's who my true self is. So it's nearly, you can't even describe it. It's just a feeling of what's right.
Mm. Perfect. I love it. Well, let's hope that we can get a little bit of Janine in us, a little bit of wisdom and inspiration. And now, I don't know if I should tell you this, but I'm going to tell you this. I can't remember when it was exactly, but it must have been 12 years ago. I did a gig for Boost Juice, and it was on, and you were there, and it was, I feel like it was on Hamilton Island.
Yeah, but would have been one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, like in Queensland.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I was shit. I can't, like, I do generally over 100 gigs a year when the world's not in a pandemic. But it was, no, it was, and I was very well compensated and looked after, and it was a very nice group. And I just remember going, this company's got great energy, and it's so well done.
No, thank you. And thanks for coming to our conference.
Wow, thanks for having me.
It is a great bunch of people. Now, I have got one question for you.
Sure.
What do you think of Metforum?
You mean Metformin?
Metformin. You see, I told you I make up words. Yeah. See? I came close, but it wasn't quite right.
No, that's all good. It's all good. So, look, I would be irresponsible if I gave an opinion because I haven't used it and I haven't done lots of research in it. But for those going, what the fuck is it? It's a
drug for type 2 diabetes.
Yeah. It's kind of a blood sugar regulator, I think, but it's used for people with diabetes, but also it is being used in an anti-aging sense. Are you using it, Tiff?
It's so funny you mention this because I Googled it yesterday. So it must be a hot topic right now because I was listening to a podcast, someone talked about it, and I went, what is that? So
yeah,
I'm eagerly awaiting this answer, Craig.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, it anecdotally, it seems to do some good stuff, and that's a terrible answer, but I would be irresponsible. I haven't tried it. I haven't done any research on it. But it's being used in the anti-aging space, and David Sinclair, I think, is an advocate. Is that where you got it from?
Yeah, he actually, no, it's funnily enough, a bit like what Tiffany said, it's actually coming up a lot of times. Like it's sort of, you hear it here and then you hear it here and you're going, okay, so, you know, what is this product? I know what the product is because I've researched it, but, it's still a medicine. So
yes, it is. It's a drug. And also he talks a lot about, is it NMN? I always get that acronym, NMN.
And NADS.
On that.
And what?
And NADS. Yeah. Are you on NADS too?
No, I'm on the NMN and resveratrol.
Yep, which is basically the skin of a grape.
Yeah. Better than wine. Better than smashing a bottle of wine every night, apparently.
But I think, I mean, well, we're not winding up, apparently. We will in a sec, though. I think that the door on, like prop, I mean, I feel like most anti-aging stuff until very recently has been kind of bullshit. But there now we're getting some great science. There's a guy that you should listen to me telling you what to do, but you will fucking love him, Janine. He's called Andrew Huberman. Follow him on LinkedIn, not on LinkedIn, on Insta.
Yep.
It's just Huberman Lab. My listeners are sick of me plugging all these people, but I just plug people who are smart. I don't know him. Tiff's trying to get him on the podcast.
What's his name?
His name is Andrew Huberman, H-U-B-E-R-M-A-N.
Right, beautiful.
Now, he's a neuroscientist, but he understands, I mean, you know, the endocrine system, hormones, of course, the brain, the nervous system, everything about wellness and performance. And on his Instagram, which you'll start and you'll go down a rabbit hole for 3 hours because you're a curious brain. He does these 3, 4, 5, sometimes 7-minute videos and explains the most complicated shit in the most user-friendly way. I reckon he's maybe the best science communicator in the world right now.
Okay.
So great. I'll have a listen to him.
I will. Thanks for that.
We will now. I know you don't need any followers or friends, but is there anything you want to direct people towards?
Look, you know, all the normal socials. I'm on mainly Instagram. I could go another rabbit hole. I won't even say it. Yeah, Instagram. I've got a book. If you're interested, if you're in lockdown and you want a book, it's called The Accidental Entrepreneur. But hey, smoothie.
Perfect. Well, we appreciate you. If you stay there for one moment, that'd be great. Tiffany Ann Cook, good job. Good recruit. Good getting by you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Janine.
Thank you, Janine.
And thank you, listeners. Love your gutses, your collective gutses. See you next time.